Hello, my name is Diego Toral. I work as a graphics software engineer at Igalia. And I'm one of the developers of the Vulkan V3DV driver for Raspberry Pi 4, which we presented here at XCC last year. And today's presentation is going to give an update on what we have been up to for the last 12 months and where we are today. So this is the structure that I prepared for this presentation. We are going to start with a very quick recap of where we were a year ago, and then I'm going to detail what has changed since then, what new features and improvements we have brought to the driver. One of the areas in which we focused, especially in the first months of the year, was performance. So I would like to go in details there and explain what kind of work we did and what kind of results we achieved. And then I would like to finish the presentation with some thoughts about things we might be working on for the next 12 months, maybe. So starting with a quick recap of where we were a year ago when we presented at XCC the driver for the first time. We had a minimal Vulkan 1.0 implementation. And when I say minimal, I really mean fairly minimal in the sense that Vulkan 1.0 allows for many optional features and, of course, extensions that we just didn't have. We were also not conformant at that point. We were kind of getting very close, but we were still at the point where we were kind of squashing the last few CTS test failures. We had not merged the driver in the upstream Mesa repositories yet. We were starting discussions. Actually, I think we started discussing this with upstream right after XCC. And one of the issues I mentioned we had was that the driver was still, you know, fairly immature in terms of actual testing. We had been testing with CTS, and we had been testing with some, you know, relatively simple games such as the Quake Classics or other demos such as demos from the Sasha Williams repositories. But we had not been able to test with, like, you know, more modern applications and games, if you will. And a good part of this was related to the fact that, well, we were still getting there with the driver and focusing on just developing the features and not so much as, you know, not so much testing yet. The other part of this story was that the reality of Vulkan and applications and games available for Linux ARM wasn't really that great, right? So that was one of the issues we had at the point. So fast forward 1 year to present day. Let's see where we are. So obviously, some of the things that are probably well known by this time is that we merged the driver upstream, and we have been developing upstream ever since. Another thing we did is to integrate our internal CI with the upstream GitLab CI. And this has been very nice for both the OpenGL and the Vulkan drivers, not only because it makes regression checking a lot easier and preventing regressions a lot easier, but also because it makes it easier for external contributors to test their patches before sending them for review. And the other thing we did, of course, was to obtain Vulkan 1.0 conformance. And I think this should happen all either before the end of the last year or very early after. So other things we've been working on is Vulkan 1.1. So we currently, I think, have a minimal Vulkan 1.1 implementation, which again is not yet conformant. We are working on finishing the last test failures that we have. We have a few flaky tests and things like this. So I think we are not very far from being ready to claim conformance. So hopefully this is something that we will be able to achieve soon. We have also been getting a bunch of additional extensions and optional features that our driver can support. Some of these were also contributed by external developers, which is great. We also have better Windows system integration these days. And again, this was thanks to external contributors. Particularly, they provided support for Quell and DirectDisplay, which is also very nice. And as I suggested before, we have been working on improving performance, and there have been some significant improvements in this regard as well. So another thing that we got working is RenderDoc. So RenderDoc was actually working, I think, 1 year ago, but there were some annoying bugs that kind of made it difficult to use in practice. So we did manage to get this fixed, and at least in my testing, I think it was working fine. We also got GFX Reconstruct, which is this tool that allows you to save traces from a game and reproduce them afterwards. This is something that we got working for our own purposes, as I will describe later when we discuss performance. But it's a useful, really nice tool that's available for developers and that should be working fine as well. And I mentioned before that one of our issues last year was the lack of real-world testing. In that regard, I think we also made some improvements. We were lucky enough to get our hands on some Unreal Engine 4 samples, binaries that were compiled for the Raspberry Pi 4 by some other people who made them available to us. And while these are still, just small demos, they were useful in testing our driver with more modern workloads, and we are happy to report that these are working fine. And they were also very useful to drive some of the performance optimization efforts that I'll discuss later. So, as you can see, there's been a lot of new things happening during the last year. And as I mentioned, one of our focuses for that period of time was performance. So let's see a bit what we did there. So as I said, we got our hands on some Unreal Engine 4 samples, and this was for us a great opportunity to use this more kind of modern game code to test where how well the driver was doing. And what we found is that we were generally GPU limited, which is, I guess, what you would expect and what you would want when you are developing a driver. You do not want to be CPU limited because that could point to issues in the driver. So I think this was ideal, at least at first. I think there was only one game that at some points was CPU limited, and it was this racing game that is there on the bottom right section. The issue there was that that game was emitting a very large amount of occlusion queries, and our implementation for that was not optimal. So we improved that, and kind of that got rid of the CPU limitation. I think that's basically the only case where we were CPU limited. So generally, we were GPU limited, and what we found is that these Unreal Engine 4 samples were a lot more expensive in terms of shading than anything that we had run through the driver before, which makes sense, right? So we focus most of our performance work, not only, but most of it, and at least the part that I'm going to discuss here on the shader compiler, which is great in the sense that all the optimization work we did here was not only useful for Vulkan, but also for our OpenGL drivers because we shared the shader compiler basically. So in terms of performance, what we did was, I mean, like the process is very basic and probably what you would expect. We basically capture generated shader code from these Unreal Engine 4 samples. We try to identify not optimal code traces by eyeballing these captures for a very long amount of time, really. So once you have identified non-optimal code traces, you have to trace them back in the compiler stack to understand when and why they are generated. And then you start designing and thinking about ways in which you can do better code generation for these situations. And after you have an implementation for a particular optimization, then you need to find a way to verify the results. And here is where things sometimes get tricky. You know, sometimes the optimizations are like produce very obvious results, and you just run the game and just the frame rate is just better, right? It's obvious. Even for Unreal Engine 4 samples, which are at least on our platform, have a wildly varying frame rate behavior. Like I guess Unreal Engine is doing its own thing under the hood, and even if you are not modifying anything, even if the camera is static, nothing's going on, nothing is changing, the frame rate can suddenly drop or increase for no obvious reason. But beyond that, there are like other issues, like sometimes the performance optimizations are not so large that they kind of get lost in the noise of the frame rate variance and things like that. So in some cases it was relatively easy. Some of the demos have a more stable frame rate than others. But in general, so what we did to verify the results was a combination of manual testing in some cases. In other cases, we would just capture traces with GFX Reconstruct and reproduce them with GFX Reconstruct to make sure basically that the workload we were testing was exactly the same, and then we could easily test the patch against them and see the performance output difference. And of course, we always have ShaderDB, which for those who don't know, is this large collection of shaders from various games that we can run through our shader compiler and extract stats on the generated code to see how we are improving or regressing on various fronts. So in terms of what we actually did, so as I said before, all these Unreal Engine 4 samples have in common that the shading is fairly expensive, at least in comparison to other things we have seen before. So for example, it was very common for many shaders to have upwards of 60 memory accesses from a shader, which include texturing and UVOs, for example, per pixel or per vertex. So that was kind of high, and we suspected that that was a bottleneck for our platform. So the unit that was involved with that is called the TMU in our platform. And one of the things we did there was better pipelining of these operations. So typically we would just emit for example, a texture fetch operation, and then we would switch to another thread, which is the way that our hardware allows us to hide latency from the texturing operation. And then as the we return from that other thread, we would immediately try to retrieve the result and install automatically if that the result was not there yet. So we could do a bit better and try to queue. In some cases, there are restrictions, but in some cases we can queue more than one TMU operation, for example, and then we could try to do better postponing actually accessing the result from that texture operation until it was absolutely necessary to try and hide the latency better. And that provides some improvements, but maybe not as much as we thought it would be. I think we got something like 3 or 4% improvement from that in some of the samples. What did make a huge improvement though was and the fact that we realized that some of these UVO operations are typically constant across all SIMD lanes, which basically mean they are uniform loads somewhat. So for these kind of fetches, we can use a different mechanism in our hardware that provides or has the capacity for sequential reads. It has the capacity to provide us with a 32-bit value, uniform value per cycle. Which is much better than what we can get with the TMU. So there is some setup every time that you want to fetch with this mechanism, but the key here is that many of these UVO reads usually fetch multiple 32-bit sequential values. So for example, if you're loading a VEC4, you are actually doing four sequential scalar accesses to memory, which is perfect for this mechanism. But beyond that, even if you have structures in the UBOs, it's very common that applications read them sequentially. And even if they don't, our compiler can reorder some of these to make them sequential. So by using these and optimizing this process as much as we could, we saw up to 20 or 30% performance improvement with some of the shader workloads and with some of the samples, which is a huge improvement. Other things we've been working on have to do with the capacity that our hardware has to emit multiple instructions in the same cycle. So there's, of course, a number of restrictions that could prevent that, but we found that our compiler was, in some cases, being too conservative with this. And so improving scheduling flexibility for that and it was kind of important to improve this. And the other thing we did is there was a bug, I think, that was preventing us from merging instructions as much as we could, that I think only by itself improved code generation by 4 or 5%, I think. So the other thing we noticed is that all these shaders had a lot of variance between the vertex and the diaphragm shader stage. And our code generation for smoothly interpolated variants was not really optimal. So in theory, when we have a smooth interpolated variant in our platform, we need three instructions to produce the final interpolated value. But if you are using the hardware optimally and pipelining these instructions properly, after the first variant, you can produce one per cycle. But for reasons that go beyond the scope of this presentation, this wasn't happening. And we were only able typically to produce one every two cycles. So when you have a lot of variants, such as in this kind of workloads, that was also a hit on performance. And that's something that we also managed to improve very significantly. And these are only some examples. There were many other smaller optimizations that we did here and there. That also contributed to improving the overall performance. But I guess this gives an idea of what were some of the main things we did. So how does that translate to actual results? So in terms of shader DV improvements, I just put here some of the, what I think are some of the most important results. So the first row here, we improved thread count by a bit over 1%. So threads, as I said before, is the mechanism that our hardware has for hiding latency from a memory access from shaders such as texturing. So increasing the thread count here is better. It's a good thing. And then we reduce the total instruction count by 9%, which is a huge reduction, really. It basically means that on average, our shaders are 9% smaller in code size, which means obviously that they require less cycles to execute. Another thing we did is to reduce uniform counts. So there is a lot of state in our platform that has to be consumed by the shaders through uniforms. And this is for OpenGL in particular, this is one of the main causes of CPU overhead, because every time that you have a draw call that needs to change some of its uniforms to represent a state change, you need to rewrite the entire uniform stream for that draw call. So reducing uniforms helps alleviate this and reduces CPU overhead. And we also, even though we haven't identified this to be a huge cause of CPU overhead, at least with the samples we've tested on the Vulkan driver, a 6% to 7% reduction, it's still very significant. And even if it doesn't help as much on Vulkan, it should definitely help the OpenGL driver. And the other thing that I put here is spill and fills. As you can see, there's also a significant reduction for these stats as well, which means basically that we are spilling less and using the register file that we have available more efficiently, which is great. So the next question is, how does this translate to actual game performance? I have here a bunch of different games and samples that we have been testing with. And on the y-axis, you have frame rate improvements in percentage. So as you can see, there are improvements all across the board, no matter what kind of game. Even for the Quake Classics, there is significant improvements. But the larger improvements happen on the Unreal Engine 4 samples. I have two, the third and the fourth bars here are the shooter demo from Unreal Engine 4 with low and high-end settings, respectively. As you can observe, these are the two samples that got the most benefit, which makes sense since these are the samples and the shaders that we use to drive the performance optimization efforts. These are also the most complex shaders in this collection of samples, so it also makes sense that they are the ones that have the most opportunities for being improved by these optimizations. But the nice takeaway is that the improvements are really seen all across the world. And as I said, we would expect a significant part of the optimizations that we did to also benefit the OpenGL driver to a similar extent. So there is a caveat with all the performance work that we did, and it's that many of these optimizations have a cost, which is it comes in the form of increased register pressure. So in order to kind of alleviate this, what we did is to have a mechanism by which our driver can try really hard to disable certain optimizations when it needs to spill, basically, to compile the shader. So we have a mechanism that can iteratively disable optimizations that are known to potentially cause additional register pressure, with the hopes that we can produce the best form of the shader possible that doesn't spill. Now, I should say that this increases compile time a little bit, which was already an issue. In fact, you can see with any of these Unreal Engine 4 samples, I was a bit surprised actually about this, because this being small samples, I would expect that Unreal would just compile all the pipelines before the gameplay loop. But it doesn't. It does compile some pipelines. In fact, as soon as you move the camera, it will compile some pipelines, and you can see the game freeze when that happens. I mean, this was happening even before all these optimizations, and this was just making it even slightly, but even if it's slightly worse. So what we did to alleviate this was to implement the disk cache, which works really well. It won't help you in the first playthrough, but definitely helps in playthroughs other than the first. This is something that we did only for the Vulkan driver for now, but probably it's something that we might want to do for OpenGL as well in the future. I would also like to comment on a few, I guess, lessons that we learned from this process. One is we initially have been working on I think this was work started by Emma. On a near scheduling implementation that was useful. It gets some of the job done, but we found that maybe near is not exactly the best place if you want to really, get the most of the scheduling. For example, our near scheduler at present tries to separate as much as possible all the texturing from all the texture, I mean, texturing from when you actually use the results, which makes sense, right? You are trying to hide the latency, but it doesn't account for the fact that there are limitations in how many texture operations we can queue and how much register pressure this can increase on our target platform. It has some heuristics to try to kind of balance these two things, but in practice, they don't always work really well. I think by doing this at the viewer level in the future, we might be able to do better. The other thing we saw is that producing better vir, which by the way is like an intermediary representation of the shader code that is very close to the assembly but not quite there yet, but it allows us to incorporate some of the hardware semantics into it. So sometimes we do an optimization that produces better vir, but we ended up producing worse QPU code, which is the actual assembly. And this was because of register allocation. It turns out that in our platform in particular, register allocation plays a fundamental role to allow for our capacity to merge multiple instructions. So depending on how register allocation worked for a particular code, sometimes it would actually lead to worse QPU, even if the the starting point was better. We actually fixed, or at least I think we improved some of the heuristics involved with register allocator, which according to Shader Debris produce clearly better results. But before we did this, we actually dropped some of the optimizations because of that. So I think in the future we might want to revisit some of them and see if our register allocation and QPU scheduling is now up to the task to really make good on the better view. And then I mentioned how we are now having multiple compiler strategies that iteratively disable some optimizations to produce the best version of a shader we can possibly produce. But these are not, I mean, this process is not always optimal, and sometimes this is not exactly what happens because we kind of assume that if we have high register pressure and we need to spill, and we disable this optimization, which is likely to produce higher register pressure, we are going to have a better version of the shader that does less spilling. And that's not always the case. So I think we could even do a bit better by trying to sometimes remember what was the best strategy instead of always assuming that the next strategy is going to be better. All right, and so that does it for kind of the performance work we did. And now we would like to discuss a bit what will may happen in the future, what our plans for the next year or so. Now, this is still very early stage. Nothing of this is confirmed, but here are some early thoughts. So obviously we have Vulkan 1.1 conformance in our sites. We are finishing up work for that. I hope we can submit this before the end of the year. We know we still have a large backlog of optional features and extensions that we haven't implemented yet. And it would be nice to focus on this. We had a few requests for some of these to support emulators and things that people may like to use with our driver on the Raspberry Pi 4. So we would like to support that going forward if we can. It might be interesting to try to understand how medium P 16-bit could improve or not our performance, our register allocation process. I would like to investigate that a little bit. Generally, we would also want to work on performance a little bit more. I think there's always things that you can keep improving. We also, I think this is important at this point, improve our kernel interface. So when we presented the Vulkan driver a year ago, we mentioned that we were reusing exactly the same interface that we use for the OpenGL driver. And this doesn't really match the semantics that Vulkan has perfectly. And because of that, we are limited in some ways where I think we don't want to continue being limited. And this affects performance, but also some hacks that we had to do in the driver. I would really love to see some of these gone and improved. And then maybe, of course, we could always start thinking about Vulkan 1.2 once we obtain conformance for 1.1. I don't think this should be an immediate priority for us. I would rather focus on, as I said, supporting more extensions and features than focusing on Vulkan 1.2. But of course, this is always going to be a possibility. So, and that's it for this presentation. So if you want to stay in touch with us, reach out, ask questions, whatever. You can talk to us at the video call channel at OFTC. We are also on the Mesa Devil mailing list. And of course, you can file bugs or feature requests on the Mesa GitLab. And if you want to just follow development progress, both Alejandro and me usually blog every now and then about that. So just you can just follow our blogs. So that's it. I think we have some time for questions, and if you have any, I would love to try to answer them as best as I can. And I would also like to let you know that Igali is always seeking out people who are passionate about free software, about Linux, about graphics. So if you would like to work on this stuff, just let us know, and we would love to know about you. So that's it. I hope you enjoyed the presentation.
Okay, and we're ready to go with the QA session. Welcome, Yagdral. And now we have a few questions here from IRC. The first one is from Eric Engstrom. What's a QPU?
Okay, so a QPU is like the shader core in the Raspberry Pi Broadcom GPU. And we also use QPU to refer to the native assembly of the QPU processor.
All right, another question from JMS. What's near and vier scheduler?
Okay, so NIR is just a representation of the shader code that it's translated by Mesa. So we get the GLSL or SPRB code from the application, and it is translated into a different representation, which is NIR, which is then used to optimize and run, a number of loading and optimization passes. And the scheduling aspect refers to decisions that are made at that level about the ordering of the instructions. So which instructions are emitted early, which instructions are pushed back. And this is, for example, done to hide latency from texturing operations. So if you have a texture operation, and then later on you use the result from the texture operation, the NIR scheduler will try to put the texture operation early. So you have instructions in between the texture operation and when you actually use the result to hide the latency from that operation. And what I mentioned there is that instead of doing this at the NIR level, which is completely hardware agnostic and doesn't understand many of the concepts of the underlying hardware, we would probably like to do this at the vier level, which is a different lower level shader representation that knows about the target hardware. It's specific to the Broadcom GPU, to the V3DB driver. And there we can incorporate additional semantics that can allow us to do scheduling better.
All right. Bas Nieuwenhuizen asks, any plans for a Kronos Vulkan 1.0 submission?
Yeah, so Vulkan, we are already conformant for Vulkan 1.0. This happened like almost a year ago. And what we are now getting ready is for Vulkan 1.1. And I hope that we can do this before the end of the year, hopefully very soon.
Does the Raspberry Pi have a tiling GPU? If so, have you looked at some of the experimentation Fredrino had on maximizing the length of each render pass?
Right, so yes, it's a tiling GPU. And no, I haven't looked at that yet, but I guess we will be interested in that. I mean, we know there are some things that we can do. For example, our driver can merge subpasses in some cases where basically the application is not being smart and it's splitting things in subpasses that it shouldn't do. But other than that, we are not very good at that. We also have a suboptimal optimization of input attachments where we could do better. But yeah, I would be interested in looking more into the what Fredrino did.
One more from Bass. Nice to see GFX Reconstruct being useful for testing. Has it also been useful for performance testing?
Actually, we used it for performance testing specifically. So we had this problem where some of these Unreal Engine demos, they would either spawn the camera at different locations every time, or at different points in time, they would just have different performance behaviors without, probably due to the game code, not our code. So we use GFX Reconstruct to make sure that we could test the patch against the exact same GPU workload. And it was very useful for that, yeah.
Fire asks, do you have any good profiling tools for people optimizing their games or programs on the Raspberry Pi?
No, I mean, we have to optimize the CPU side code. We just use, your choice of CPU profiler. There's nothing specific for the Raspberry Pi. And for the case of optimizing on the GPU, there is a bunch of things that we may use, but like we can dump shader code and things like that. But there's nothing specific that is particularly useful in this regard. I guess a combination of GFX reconstruct, render doc, CPU profilers, and things like that is all that we have. I would love to see better tools, but for the time being, that's what we have.
Okay, it looks like that's all from the audience. Thank you very much for your talk, and well, have a great conference.
Thank you. You too.